On the third day of October, Halloween gave to me 3 werewolf colonies, 2 spooky sisters, and a psycho who killed Janet Lee. Well, hey there, welcome back to another edition of the 31 Days of Halloween. This is day 3, October 3rd here. And boy, oh, we got a banger today, folks. Continuing our look into a handful of werewolf movies. Of course, yesterday was Ginger Snaps. We are looking at 1981's The Howling, directed by Joe Dante. Interestingly, a couple of other tidbits about the production, written by John Sayles, who not only, wrote such films as The Return of the Secaucus 7 and Madawan, but also did Alligator when he wasn't doing character studies and social issue films. He was doing monster movies. And The Howling, oh my goodness, is it a good one. It stars, of course, Dee Wallace, who you may have seen in any number of horror films, from Critters to The House of the Devil more recently. Christopher Stone, who would eventually marry Dee Wallace as her husband. Patrick McNee from The Avengers, the television series The Avengers, who, of course, is the head of the colony, the doctor, kind of bringing all of these werewolves together, and Kevin McCarthy from Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and John Carradine, the legendary John Carradine, Robert Picardo as Eddie Quist. Like everybody's in it. And like I said, Joe Dante is directing this, who of course did Gremlins as well as Piranha and Matinee and just a bunch of great movies. Joe Dante's truly a national treasure. Shout out to Dennis Dugan, who plays Chris, sort of one of the heroes of the movie, who has been in everything from, a bunch of Billy Madison production films, or Happy Madison, is that the production? The Adam Sandler stuff. Still out there doing it. Currently working. Was in a bunch of episodes of Moonlighting, interestingly. Anyway, big actor in the 80s and 90s. And it's the story of Dee Wallace, who at the beginning of the film, she's an investigative reporter, a television journalist, kind of a 5 o'clock news kind of lady at a time when that was a thing. And she goes to investigate a potential killer, a guy named Eddie, as far as she knows, as indicated by these happy face stickers that he tends to leave as his calling card. So she goes to meet this Eddie guy, and something happens in this porno booth where he has invited her, and he's not Dee Wallace isn't exactly sure what. Some cops show up and shoot Eddie, and Dee Wallace has some post-traumatic stress disorder. She has trouble sleeping and can't exactly remember what it was that happened inside this booth with Eddie. And so Patrick McNee, to help her out, advises that she spend a little time at The Colony, which is a sort of a new age retreat where she can kind of go get her shit together. And so she and her husband, Bill, who's a former football player and Marine Corps guy, head up there to get away for a week or so and try to help her recall what happened and also to recover somewhat from this trauma. Of course, when they get there, they realize that some of the people at this colony are kind of weirdos, including the aforementioned John Carradine, and Slim Pickens is the local sheriff, and a guy named Noble Willingham, who, if you're me, you remember as the Main general, I think, is what he is in Good Morning Vietnam, but he's been in a ton of stuff as well. As well as Marsha, as played by Elizabeth Brooks, who I don't believe really did much else besides The Howling. I take that back. I guess she did a bunch of stuff in the mid 70s and on television, and was only in a handful of films, most notably, of course, The Howling. And so this kind of came out around the time that American Werewolf in London did. And famously, if you don't know this story, that Rick Baker was tapped to do The Howling, but he had agreed years before to do this werewolf movie that John Landis wanted to do. And as The Howling was going into production, John Landis says, "Hey, I got the money to do American Werewolf, and you promised you would do it." And Rick Baker honored his word and said, "Yeah, you're right, but I promised, you know, the people, the production of The Howling, and Joe Dante, that he would do some work there as well." So instead, Rick Baker suggested Rob Bottin, who would later go on to do some, you know, absolutely stellar work in The Thing. And Rick Baker did, he's listed as a consultant on the film because he did help develop a lot of the creature effects for this, as well as doing, you know, arguably the best werewolf transformation that's ever been captured on film in American Werewolf. And after watching The Howling, I think I'm still in that camp. I still think American Werewolf is probably the better transformation sequence, although I find the werewolves and The Howling to be generally scarier and a little more horrific, for lack of a better term. So Dee Wallace and her husband are beset by the weirdos of the colony. Her husband ultimately falls in with this Marsha lady and becomes a werewolf all on his own. And meanwhile, there are her buddies that are investigative journalists or producers, segment producers, something like that, as played by Dennis Dugan. And I think Belinda Bulaski is Terry in this. At any rate, they're kind of sniffing around to try to figure out Eddie's origin story, especially after Eddie's body goes missing, and they visit a local occultist, an occult bookstore run by the venerable Dick Miller, who is absolutely wonderful in this movie and is kind of Joe Dante's good luck charm, and shows up here. And Joe Dante, also great about peppering in, you know, some friends of his. There's a great gag at the beginning of the movie where, when Dee Wallace is on the phone getting directions from Eddie on where to meet him, she is in a phone booth, and waiting behind her is Roger Corman. And Roger Corman, famously thrifty with his budgets, when she leaves the phone booth, Roger Corman steps inside and checks the public telephone for change. A thing that doesn't exist. Like, this is a movie that could never exist today, at least in this form, because of cell phones. There are too many scenes that rely on, you know, not being able to get in touch with somebody when you need to, and not able to pass along information when you need to. This is a movie where a couple of texts and a snapshot would probably upend the werewolf's grand scheme. But in addition to Dick Miller, at the occult bookstore, one of the shoppers is Forrest J. Ackerman, and he's in fact holding a couple of copies of the magazine that he is most famous for, which is Famous Monsters of Filmland, which is a terrific cameo. Mick Garris shows up at the back end of this movie as like a dad on a couch or something. Paul Bartel has a moment in the movie from Eating Raoul, among other movies. And yeah, it's just, you know, Joe Dante doing what Joe Dante do. He's kind of like Mike Flanagan, the modern equivalent, I guess, of Joe Dante in a lot of ways, who finds his stable of actors. Or John Carpenter, I guess, does the same thing, where he has a handful of actors that he loves working with and continues to work with them for years and years and years. And Joe Dante does the same thing. And Dick Miller in particular, I think, shows up in just about every Joe Dante movie. What makes The Howling so great, though, in addition to having, you know, fantastic transformation sequences, which it does, but it's a genuinely great movie. It moves at a lightning pace. It's only 90 minutes, and in that time, you get a whole lot of story. There's an interesting bit of parody going on with this sort of new age colony. And this is a product of having lived during the time that the movie came out in 1981, which is that this was kind of the beginning of stuff like Scientology and Moonies from the 70s and things like that, where all these kind of fringe cults and new age movements and that kind of thing were really picking up steam and gaining popularity. So this is kind of a film skewering that, but more than that, there's Patrick McNee's character, Dr. Wagner, has assembled this colony, which is, again, a bunch of werewolves, but he's trying to help them integrate into society, that they're raising cattle to eat as opposed to people, that they're trying to kind of catch up with the times and so forth. And when Dee Wallace and her husband run afoul of them, chaos ensues as Chris and Terry, her pals, have to do some legwork to figure out that what they are dealing with is, in fact, werewolves. I don't think that word is used in the movie, or if so, it is used only once or twice, despite the fact that this does have a quick pace, and it really does. It's probably halfway through the movie before you get your first glimpses of werewolves and whatnot. But once you do, the movie is not terribly shy about showing off the effects and the look of the werewolves, which, again, I find genuinely scary. I think they're maybe my favorite looking werewolves in any movie. The long claws and the snouts and the kind of canine bend to their legs, I think, is really terrific. Also very scary is the character of Eddie Quist, as played by Robert Picardo, who is initially killed and then disappears from the morgue, only to show up at the colony later to terrorize both Dee Wallace and her friend Terry. And this is where we get the big transformation sequence, when Dee Wallace happens upon Terry and his victim, or Terry and Eddie, Terry now dead. And all of this, you know, that, like, all the effects work blends together, and Joe Dante doesn't ever miss a trick. Like, it uses practical effects. There's some stop motion here and there in the movie, especially at the end. There is maybe the worst effect in the film is some animation when Dee Wallace's husband Bill is hooking up with Marcia after he has been infected by the werewolf virus, and you see them turn into werewolves as they are having sex by the fire. And, you know, it's one of those things that high def does not necessarily do any great favors for, but, you know, it's one of those things where I don't care that effect isn't great, and there are some moments in the practical effects during the transformation of Eddie Quist that are, you know, some of those shots are better than others. Although it is overall very, very good, there are still a couple of shots in that transformation sequence that are like, you know, that's something they do with CGI today, and it might look mildly better, but I'm of the mind that Anytime you can do a practical effect and have real light fall on a thing, it just looks more convincing because it's a real thing. And I kept thinking throughout this film, like, there are a couple of those shots, like I said, the animation sequence by the fire when we're getting down with some werewolf fucking, as well as the stop motion stuff at the end of the movie, that would clearly these days be done with CGI and probably to the benefit. You know, as much as I love practical effects, those are things that are hard to pull off practically, and some effective CGI would work, but you're talking about a grand total of 8 seconds, maybe, of total screen time for all of that stuff, if that. You know, because they were clever enough to edit that pretty quickly so that your eye didn't linger on an effect that maybe didn't work as well as some of the other stuff. But when it's practical, boy, the camera does linger. You get a lot of great transformation shots. But as I have often said, nobody leaves a theater humming the special effects. And as good as all that stuff is, and it's great, all the effects work in this stuff, in The Howling, is impressive to one degree or another. That said, what makes this movie great is that Dee Wallace is such a great character in the film, as Karen, who is not that kind of Karen, who is a woman who goes from having this incredible trauma to having gone to this retreat with her husband, and they're not having a great time. There's a great moment where her husband wants to have sex, and she has a flash of what happened in the booth with Eddie, and she freaks out and doesn't want to have sex. And then a couple of days later, after he's been infected with werewolfism, with lycanthropy, she wants to hook up with him. And he's like, you know, I had these shots because of this attack that I suffered. And she has this great moment where she says, boy, we just can't get in sync, can we? You know, we never want the same things at the same time. And that kind of stuff is really interesting. You know, it feels like a real relationship and a really caring but fraught relationship. And when she suspects that he's having an affair, which he very clearly is, that's a great scene too. Like, all these human moments in this werewolf movie are really what puts it over the top. And there's a great bit with Patrick McNee as Chris finally shows up to save the day. You know, the head of all of this retreat, the colony is what it's called. When Dr. Wagner is approaching Chris, who has by that point wised up and gotten himself some silver bullets, and when Chris is forced to shoot Dr. Wagner, Patrick McNee has a great moment where, as he's dying, he says, oh, thank God. You know, it's just the weariness of having been this monster and dealt with this evil inside him for so long. And the converse of that is the rest of these kind of cult-like members of this werewolf pack, I suppose, that are believers that, hey, we shouldn't bother trying to, you know, coexist with humans. Like, we're just animals, and there's something wonderful about that. And there's, you know, that central pack of Marsha and this dude named TC who is sort of this primal character, and Eddie, who are all related. And they very clearly do not give a shit about trying to pretend that they are anything but werewolves ready to strike. And the movie is scary. That's the other thing. Not only are the werewolves scary looking, Joe Dante knows how to direct a horror movie, and there are scenes that are very tense and very frightening, and Dante knows how to use the effects to make that more effective, but also knows when to pull away a little bit. It's just terrific. It's just a great movie. It's a movie filled with interesting characters doing interesting things all the time. You know, I kind of had this a qualified recommendation when we talked about Ginger Snaps yesterday, where I said, you know, there's some pacing issues on the back end of it. That being said, The Howling is 20 minutes shorter than Ginger Snaps, And I think it's all the better for it. It trims the fat everywhere you can. There's an old writer's adage that goes, enter a scene as late as you can and get out of the scene as early as you can. To keep it brief, to keep it punchy, to keep it fun. And that's what this movie does. It doesn't waste any time. It doesn't screw around. The scenes that you want to linger on, you do linger on. Like the transformation sequence and the attack from Eddie is an extended sequence, and that's where you want to be. The scene where Terry and Chris go visit Dick Miller at the occult bookstore, and you get to, you know, get a little bit of werewolf lore in a way that doesn't feel like heavy-handed exposition. And it's also very funny because Dick Miller is a great comic actor, and he's an occult bookstore owner who doesn't really believe in all this shit, but, you know, he says himself, like, look, lady, I'm just trying to make a buck here, you know? And that's a terrific scene with him wheeling around on this ladder on the bookshelves. And, you know, like everywhere you look in this movie, all the nooks and crannies of the film have interesting things and little nods to werewolf movies or wolves in cartoons. And, dumb stuff like Chris in bed is reading. I'm sorry, not Chris. Bill in bed with Karen is reading Tom Wolfe's You Can't Go Home Again. Everyone is eating wolf chili. It's just a lot of dumb puns like that. At one point, Chris and Terry are in bed watching the original Wolfman movie. It is a movie that loves being a werewolf movie and tipping its hat to other werewolf lore and movies and media. It's got a great tag on the end of the film where after Dee Wallace, you know, reveals that werewolves are among us, we get a very hammy line from Marsha, which I still kind of love. And it's one of the first times I can recall seeing a movie that has a post-credits tag. And it's a joke. You know, it's a clip from the original Wolfman that's him saying, I'm getting out of here. Lon Chaney saying, I'm getting out of here and leaving. It's just a wonderful, brief, exciting, scary, well-crafted, detailed werewolf film. And it's one of the best that's ever made. Not just one of the best werewolf movies. It's just one of the best horror movies. And I was telling my friend that watching this movie again, and it had been years since I'd seen it, way too long. It was like slipping into a warm bath, only with werewolves, which is probably hell on a drain. But that happens. It's just a terrific movie, and if I can't impart to you that this is a great Halloween pick, then what am I doing here? This is a wonderful movie to watch around Halloween. It's spooky. It's wonderful. It's got mood. It's got atmosphere. It's got good characters. It's got some laughs. It's only 90 minutes long. It's just the best. So that's it. That's our second werewolf movie. It's not the last werewolf movie we're going to talk about, but it's the second of our little mini run of werewolf films here at the beginning of October. So look, thank you so much for listening. As always, be sure to follow on all the social media channels at Legion Podcasts, as well as drop by our website, legionpodcasts.com, where you can subscribe to not only this podcast, the Legion Podcast feed, but you can also subscribe to the individual shows and also go check out some videos. Like, we have movie trailers up there and videos that we drop on YouTube and stuff like that. And while I'm talking about the YouTube, by all means, drop by youtube.com/legionpodcasts, where you can subscribe there as well and get live episodes of Duncan and Bo Come Correct and just everything, just all kinds of stuff, anything that you could possibly want. You know, thanks for being a Legionnaire. Thanks for listening to this, and most of all, I hope you're enjoying this these little nuggets of reviews and slight recommendations and experiences as we celebrate the Halloween season. It is absolutely my favorite time of year. I love watching horror movies. I love watching horror movies, especially around Halloween. And I love talking to you guys about horror movies that I dearly love or some that I haven't seen and feel like I should have seen. And I'm getting around to some of those this year as well. There are some first time watches on this list that I can't believe I've never seen before. So it's great. It's exciting. I love this. I hope you're enjoying it too. And come back tomorrow when we will have our fourth film. Will it be a werewolf movie? Spoilers, it's going to be a werewolf movie. But one that we have not talked about on the 31 Days of Halloween last year. And of course, certainly not this year. So get out there. Have a great time. Be spooky. And remember, much like Frank Cross around Christmas time, keep Halloween in your heart. And you can feel it all year long. All right, folks. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks very much. See you soon.